Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in since they going back to showing Action Tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the anime action fan sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary. The other kids.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas. From Tom Mattis, and we are at episode 48, fastly approaching episode 50, which, as of this recording, I've actually pre-recorded. Very excited for what I have in tune for you for episode 50. And it might not be one thing, it might be a couple of things, we don't know yet. But we're at episode 48, and this is also the first review of February. And for those who remember last year, February is a very special month, being a month of love and everything. It's also a month where I celebrate everything Disney, as it is Disney month here on Tom's Prerogative. And this week, and for the first review of Disney month, we start off with an animation that ended up saving the Walt Disney Company back in the 50s. You know, there was a time slot after, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs where they had good films, but not the hit that Snow White was. This film was really Walt Disney's second biggest hit and gave it the financial backing to do all the things they would go on to do, or at least at the start. That being Cinderella, the fairy tale classic, and one of the quintessential Disney animated films of all time. Of course, this recently came out on Blu-ray this past fall, and of course I snatched it up because of chance to have... All that I'm missing now is Snow White, which I gotta find a way to get. And then I'll have all three of the quintessential fairy tale classics from Disney. And again, I'm a huge fairy tale fan. I love fairy tales. I love just how open to interpretation fairy tales are and how you can do different things with them. And really... combine that fairy tale with your own style to tell a very compelling story. And that was something Walt Disney and the Walt Disney Company has been very good at over the years with fairy tales. But you know, with Cinderella, some classic songs that people remember. Really, I think the perfecting of the Walt Disney style really first happened in Cinderella, and that's not to knock things like Fantasia and Dumbo and Pinocchio and Snow White, but I think what was started in those was really perfected at first in Cinderella. Of course, there would be, the animation would go further than that and evolve further under further tutelage of different artists and everything, but at the same point in time, this was, I think, really the first stepping stone, especially for artists like Mark Johnson, I can't believe, the original eight of Walt Disney. I actually am trying to remember this off the top of my head, and then my mind went blank. So I'll just say, the original artist that everybody knows and love of Walt Disney, like Mark Johnson, and Ollie, and I'm blanking on I hate when I blank on names, but again, this is, I think, really where they stepped up their game and sort of pronounced, this is Walt Disney. And again, it's not to disrespect the films that came before, but Cinderella was a whole different animal than what they did before. It was a return to their fairy tale, yes, but to an extent, it's even greater than what Snow White was. And it also, again, you see a lot of different things coming here. You see really the unique styling of the Disney story being molded here. And you see the things that would later go on, animation-wise, to be used in sort of things like Sleeping Beauty that would lead to the modern-day anime style. Bits and pieces of it here. Not completely. I mean, by far, I consider this actually a cartoon. I don't consider it an anime, or even a first-generation anime, as that's sort of that first-generation I call from Japan. I don't put it in that sense either. It's a cartoon, and we'll go more into why it's a cartoon later when we get to animation. But like I said, again, Cinderella, a quintessential classic. I cannot wait to get into it. And why don't we get into it as we give our synopsis, and then we'll get into review. Cinderella is the classic fairy tale of a young girl in a kingdom far away who, after her father died, is left to her abusive stepmother and her stepsisters, and is forced to be a slave in her own house. But believing that dreams will come true, one day the kingdom's prince comes home and a ball is held in his honor. And while Cinderella initially wants to go, her stepmother and sisters sabotage her dress. But her fairy godmother comes and grants her the wish of the ability to go to the ball for one night. Until the clock strikes midnight, that is. She arrives at the ball and immediately the prince and her fall in love. But the clock strikes 12 and she has to dash away, leaving only a glass slipper. This leaves the king to send the Grand Duke into the kingdom to fit the glass slipper on every girl in the kingdom. And while Cinderella is initially locked away in her home's sort of tower by her stepmother, with the help of her friendly mice, and yes, I said friendly mice, she's able to escape, meet the Grand Duke, and try on the glass slipper, showing that it fits. And she and the prince are immediately married, and they live happily ever after. This is Cinderella.
Salagadoola, Menchikapoola, Bibbidi-Bobbidi-Boo. Put them together and what have you got? Bibbidi-Bobbidi-Boo. Salagadoola, Menchikapoola, Bibbidi-Bobbidi-Boo. It will do magic, believe it or not. Bibbidi-Bobbidi-Boo. Now Salagadoola mean a Menchikapoola-Roo. But the thing I'm about that does the job is Bibbidi-Bobbidi-Boo.
And welcome back, and let's get right into review with the first thing that we usually talk about. Let's talk about music. And with Cinderella, let's talk about her opening and closing theme. And for that matter, that's the theme during the first sort of credits that you see at the beginning, and for that matter, at the end of the movie itself, which is really a version of sort of Dream Is Where the Heart Is, which is the first song that's actually sung in the movie. You know what, for the matter, for using a song that's from a movie, I think that was definitely the best song for them to use. Because it really is, it really matches what an overall theme of this movie is, or at least one of them is, the belief of dreams. And sort of the melody of that song, and we'll talk about that song here as well, really fits that idea. Again, dreams are where your heart is. The idea that wherever you're making it, as long as your heart stays true, they'll come true. And the melody within itself, it's just this very sort of hopeful, cheerful melody, follows that idea really well. And then the variations put on it for the opening and the closing are done very, very well. And so I think they fit those time slots perfectly for what this movie is going for. Going into the overall score, again, done sort of classic musical score, the right sort of combination of orchestra, the right levels, the right standing pieces, the right balance of loudness here to where the music, it stands out, but it doesn't. You know, you hear and it's there, and it enhances what the scene is going for, but it doesn't take over the scene. Again, that balance, that's a lot of times hard for a lot of composers and, you know, music people, part of animation to do. Or for that matter, any movie. But it's different in animation than it is in movies, because I think it has more of an effect. So the score was really done, and for those, again, sort of the few songs that are in the movie, you have, again, you have Dreams of Where the Heart Is, you have Nightingale, which is just a spectacular song, and the animation that goes along with it, as we'll talk about in a second, is just wonderful. It's just this sort of classic, sort of children's nursery rhyme put to song, and it's just gorgeous. And then, of course, you have Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo. Four songs. You have the Mice's we can do it, we can do it, da da, you can do it, da 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 You know, Dreams Are Where the Heart Is, you know, What the Heart Makes, excuse me. It's just a great song to start the movie off. Again, like I said, it just sets the overall theme of the movie. Nightingale is just a short reprieve, sort of, from the main story. Again, showing the differences between Cinderella and her stepsisters, who are just horrid. And then, of course, Cinderella, We Can Do It song. It's sung by the Mice and the Birds. Again, it's that sort of classic, sort of almost comedic comedy song of classic Disney that's really fun to watch. You know, again, where all the animal friends go out and help Cinderella and everything. And then, of course, Bibbidi Bobbidi is actually my favorite. It really is. Because it's just a fun romp of a song. As I look into my notes for who played the Fairy Godmother, Verona Felton just sung it beautifully. And just the fun romp and the sort of cheerfulness into it, you know. Put them together and what do you got? Bibbidi bobbidi boo. It's just a fun romp of a song. It's wonderful. It really deserved the Grammy that it won. And I believe it won a Grammy and an Oscar. Or it was at least nominated for them. That's how good the song was. There is sort of one more song, you know. There's the, you know, This Is Love. Da, 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 da. It's sort of a very deep, sort of romantic song that sort of expressed the loving feeling. Because you've lost that loving feeling. Whoa, whoa, that loving feeling. You lost that loving feeling because it's gone, gone, gone. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Ba-dum, ba-dum. Ba-dum, bum, bum. Baby, baby, I got down on my knees for you. Ba-dum, I got down on my knees. If you would only love me like you used to do. I'm sorry. Kind of again, it's one of those things where you go down a road. I have no idea why I went down. Well, I know why I went down. I mean, I'm excited that Top Gun's coming to theaters, and I like Top Gun. Anybody who has a problem with Top Gun can go die in a fire. I was talking about the song that, this is love, da-da-da-da. Again, like I said, it's that over, good feeling, or it's just a deeper feeling of emotion. It's a song that's supposed to express this grand love that the prince and Cinderella fall for each other in this small amount of time. It may be one of the fatal flaws of the film. Unfortunately, it's also, I think, one of the fatal flaws of doing the story is that, again, we'll talk more about this in story, is the whole princess and prince falling in love. Or how they fall in love. While it's a good song, I just think that whole scene sometimes gets a little bit lost. And understandably, especially after such a wonderful song like Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo. But overall, the score of the film is just a wonderful thing to listen to. Gladly would pick it up on CD, as I would many Disney scores, for obvious reasons. But again, it's that perfect balance of what music should be in an animated movie. So it's wonderful to listen to. And with that, let's move on to animation. And of course, with animation, we start off talking about the overall style. And, again, it's classic Walt Disney animation style here. Again, the nine old men of Walt Disney, as I mentioned too earlier. And of course, in the time span of me talking about music, I thought, hey, maybe you should bring up Wikipedia, look up the name so I can get it right. And there is no Bart Johnson. The nine old men are, Les Clark, Mark Davis, Ollie Johnston. Again, I sort of combined Mark and Ollie's name there. Milt Kahn, Ward Kimball, Eric Larson, Joe Lomberry, Wolfgang Rhythman, Frank Thomas. Just some wonderful classic animators that, again, are well-known in animation. People like Eric Larson, people like Mark Davis and Frank Thomas, and Ollie Johnson, especially. Again, especially Eric Larson, who would go on and train many of the top talents Disney has today. And so it's just that classic style that these people create. As I said, I think here in Cinderella, that classic Walt Disney style is perfected really for the first time. And what would be known as the quintessential Walt Disney style is really established. Again, sort of that, the round sort of, funness, especially with shapes, where good characters are filled with hope and sort of the bad characters are sort of filled with dark, again, light and hope, and sort of the good characters, darkness and despair, and sort of those bad characters, like the stepmother. Some of my favorite scenes in a Disney movie is actually in this movie. There's a scene, where the stepmother is sort of, or for that matter, all the scenes where the stepmother is sort of looking at Cinderella, stalking her, the way she stalks Cinderella with her eyes, it's just eerie, creepy, and scary, and it's just wonderful animation. I love watching. Again, the ability, really, same eyes every time, but yet able to show emotion and tell a story within those eyes. Anybody who listens to my Hexcast podcast knows I love the ability to tell the story with just the eyes. It's just a unique storytelling aspect that very few people get. And of course, the original Nine Men, they were just wonderful at doing that, at telling the story through the eyes. Then you move on to the character designs. And I love the character designs here. Cinderella is just, sort of the perfect picture of sort of the great classic Disney heroines, like Snow White, like Sleeping Beauty. Again, that just wonderful, beautiful young lady that, you understand why the stepmother is jealous of her, and why the prince wants to be with her, even if she wasn't in that gown and everything. You know, even as sort of, you know, the worker, the sort of the slave of the house, she still has this elegance, this beauty about her. You know, it's really in the animation. It's wonderful to look at. The stepmother, one of the great villains, at least animation-wise, I think, in Disney history. Again, a lot of it has to do with animation. I talked about the eyes just a second ago, but again, just her overall design. Just there's a sinnersness to here. There's times where, you know, again, how her dress is, that she almost seems floating sometimes. That gives her this sort of eerie supernatural look to her design that I just think is wonderful. The Grand Duke and the King, and again, are also a couple of my favorites, because just fun, unique designs. You know, the round, fat man with the sort of tall, skinny man. And it really lends itself to sort of the comedy that happens in Cinderella, which, all in all, their scenes are just padding. Let's be completely honest about it. Really, they do nothing for the story. And yet, they're some of my favorite scenes in the story because they're just fun to watch, even though they're padding. You have the sisters, Anastasia and Disarella. Again, they fit the mold of what they're trying to go for, and the ugly stepsisters. They are in there into the comedy of, you know, where they're with the Grand Duke or at the ball, and people are like, "Urgh." It makes you think, like, don't you think that evil stepmother at some point has just given up hope? I mean, it does bring up a good point. I mean, what was her thought process? I know what her thought process is, her as a mother, but something like, I could spoil my beautiful daughter, who would obviously go places, or I could spoil my two ugly daughters who have no hope in their life. Yeah. Doesn't make sense to me either. With that being said, you also have all the mice and just some wonderful fun designs with the, you know, the animals, with the birds, with the mice, with Jock and Gus. I originally wanted to call it sort of a Honeymooners type of, you know, Ralph and, you know, sort of Charlie. But again, that's reverse. Really, it's actually more of an Abbott and Costello type of feel here with Jacques and Gus. You know, with Jacques being Abbott and Gus being Costello. Done a little differently than the comedy duo was done, but again, that same type of feel there. You know, skinny man, fat man. The type of comedy that comes with that. That is really fun to watch. And the animation, and the character animation really denotes that. I apologize if I seem like I was blanking there, because as much as I love Abbott and Costello, I always forget who's Abbott and who's Costello. It just amazes me all this time. I always forget that the skinny one's Abbott and the big one's Costello. You know, I always want to call the big one Abbott, because the big one seems like an Abbott. But that's getting off it. You may have noticed I haven't talked about the prince yet. At the end of the day, I think one of the weakest characters in here is the prince, by far. As is in a lot of early Disney films. At least up till Sleeping Beauty, the prince is one of the weaker characters of the film. Because really, he does nothing. And it's just a very simple, elegant, royal prince design. And it does its job, it does what it needs to for the story, but, yeah, it's, maybe it's because the prince isn't much, but, yeah, just bores me, oh, to be honest, it's just boring, and, like I said, this probably has a lot more to do with the fact that the prince really does nothing in the film, rather than its design, but its design's okay, it does what it needs to do. Let's move on to special effects. There are some great use of special effects. Again, the classic sort of Disney panning. And I wish I could remember the name here. I'm trying to... the multi-plane camera. You may not be able to believe everything that's on Wikipedia, but it can at least help you remember facts that you do know, like the multi-plane camera and the 12 basic principles of animation. But again, the use of the multi-plane character to create depth, which, by the way, reminds me of something I forgot to talk about. I'll talk about it in a second. But again, like scenes like the bubble scene during the Nightingale song. Again, wonderful use of special effects of this animation and bubbles and the atmosphere that the special effects allows it to create. So for that matter, I love the special effects. I'm actually going to go back here because I actually realized something I kind of forgot I wanted to talk about with animation. I made mention to it earlier about the things we'd see, that we'd later see put in Sleeping Beauty that would help make it sort of a modern-day anime. And again, the perfection of the wonderful Walt Disney design that in itself is a stylized design, but there are things that do make this obviously a cartoon and not an anime. One of the things that I think is people may not notice, but once you do, I think it becomes obvious, and it is really one of the key differences between a cartoon and an anime. Shading. I mean, when you watch a cartoon, whether it be Family Guy, or South Park, but South Park's a whole completely different style, but, things like Family Guy, American Dad, things that would be a cartoon. Even Animaniacs, Ren and Stimpy. As the future goes on, shading becomes more evident. But shading is really light in those type of shows. And here, there really isn't any shading. I kept looking at, when I realized there was no shading, I kept really looking at the animation, trying to find shading with the character. And again, it's a very little thing, but it is the difference between anime and a cartoon in the sense that because of the lack of shading, a cartoon, while appearing in a 3D world, has a bit of a flatness to it. Whereas the type of shading that you see in an anime like Sleeping Beauty or something from Japan, the shading allows those characters to really pop off the screen. So it's more than just being in a three-dimensional space. It's inviting you into that three-dimensional space. And so, that whole lack of shading, again, it's not a criticism, but it's just a neat thing. And again, I always look for ways of how can an animation help either further what my belief is and teach me more about a theory that, even though I'm the one formulating it, still always learning more information about. It's what makes it unique to sit here and watch things like Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty and the Fleischer Superman cartoons and see the things that, while it makes them a cartoon, get later used in future animation that might make them an anime. Last thing I'll talk about with animation is the backgrounds. And most of the story does take place inside locations. And the locations themselves are beautiful. The palace is gorgeous. The house has sort of a dual identity as a background, both being sort of warm and inviting and yet sinister and entrapping. And it's a great show of the multi-purposeness of a background from the Walt Disney creators, even in same rooms. As far as outside shots, really the one outside shot is that sort of kind of painting of the village and the castle in the background, which at this point is sort of an icon of the Cinderella film itself, among other things. There's the glass slipper and there's that stuff. But at the same point in time, that's a very unique castle. When you see that castle, you know you're looking at Cinderella's castle. So with all that, you know, again, the backgrounds, I think, are really well done. Again, all the animation is really well done. With that, we're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to play a couple promos for you. And when we come back, we're going to jump into acting and story.
In the decade of the 1930s, even the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, was not spared of the ravages of the Great Depression. In a time of fear and confusion, a character emerged that would entertain and inspire millions of children and adults alike. He began not as flesh and blood, but as a simple line drawing. His comic book adventures thrilled millions around the world. The magic of radio gave to his name a breathless signature and sound. Then with television came a whole new generation to idolize his exploits. In the 70s, the world believed a man could fly. In the 80s, he was reborn in the comics, and the 90s saw his death, rebirth, and marriage. In the 21st century, he returned to the big screen and saw his origin changed and retold on several occasions. Through the decades, he has gone by many names. The Man of Tomorrow. The Last Son of Krypton. The Man of Steel. His strength is incredible. His name is legendary. His battle is never ending. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I host an internet radio show called Views from the Long Box. Superman is my favorite character of all time, and in 2013, he is turning 75. Because of this, a large portion of the episodes this year will be about the Man of Steel in a series I'm calling
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
I'm going to mark Superman's birthday in fine style by examining all aspects of the character's history, from the comics, to the movies, to the television series, and beyond, both alone and with the best and brightest of the podcasting world. It may not be every episode, but the bulk of Views in 2013 will be all about the Man of Steel. He is the first and greatest superhero of them all, and he deserves no less.
Superman at 75. The Celebration of a Legend.
A series within a series, and the biggest birthday card a fan can give his favorite hero, only at Views from the Long Box. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and for this series, over at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be! It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
Ready to form Voltron!
job for Superman.
Power Rangers!
Right away, Michael.
Autobots, transform!
By the power of Grayskull!
For the honor of Grayskull!
Hello, I'm the Doctor.
Charlie's Geekcast, coming January 1st, 2013, to www.charliesgeekcast.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right back into it with acting. Let's talk about protagonists and antagonists acting. And as one would expect from a Walt Disney Films Presents animated feature, the voice acting is top-notch here. Everybody did a wonderful job. And as we start with protagonist, Elaine Woods, again, and to run down the list real quick, Elaine Woods played Cinderella. William Phillips, with Michael, or I should say Mike Douglas, performing the singing voice for the prince. Verona Felton as the fairy godmother. Jimmy McDonald as Jacques, Gus, and Bruno. Louis von Rutan as the Grand Duke and the King. Eleanor Audrey, the legendary one herself, as Lady Tremaine. Lucille Bliss as Anastasia Tremaine. Rhoda Williams as Drizella Tremaine. And June Foray as Lucifer. But Elena Woods in the main role, really a wonderful job of providing a great voice for you to fall in love with, and for that matter, Batchy, the sort of warm enthusiasm that is of Cinderella. You know, again, everything that Cinderella was in this movie, you know, because again, she was just wonderful, warm person, and yet there was a bit of an edge to her. You know, somebody, you know, again, you see that in, you know, again, when the king's letter comes to the house and goes, we wouldn't want to disturb their singing lessons now, would we? You know, there's just that slight edge again to where it's not so much of a, oh, I'm in a goody two shoes, I'm a goody two shoes. That does really actually help the character. Just a wonderful job portraying some great emotional scenes throughout the movie. Really great job in the title role. Verna Felton nailed the fairy godmother. Just such a memorable role. As small in the film it is, everybody remembers the fairy godmother. And part of it is just the great acting of Verna Felton, just, you know, comes in out of the blue and almost steals the movie for that matter. But I would leave stealing the movie to Jimmy McDonald. You know, as again, Jacques and Gus, that whole Abbott and Costello feel, and for that matter, all the sort of animal characters. Like the King and Grand Duke, they're really padding. Because again, there's not much, you can, like most fairy tales, it's not much of a story. It's only a couple of lines. You know, Cinderella, was of a prestige family. His father, thinking that he needed to, married a woman who hated Cinderella because he cherished her over her stepdaughters. When he died, they abused him and made her their slave, until one night during a princess ball, fairy godmother gives Cinderella a wish. She goes to the ball, meets the prince, but at 12, the spell is broken. She runs home, leaves a glass slipper. Prince goes out to finds her, they get married. It's, in all honesty, the actual story itself is really, really short. That being said, so you need other things to pad it out. One of them is the adventures of, you know, Jacques, Gus, and the mice and the birds, and their dealings with Lucifer. And again, the two padding things that we're about to talk about, it's done extremely well. It never feels like padding. Again, the actors really took the role seriously, and again, created some great comedic moments, along with telling a story. And you know, Jimmy McDonald did a great job there with his voice. The other people who did it, or says the other person who did a good job there, because they were also padding, was the Grand Duke and King. And again, that whole classic, you know, round, fat guy and tall, skinny guy comedy ensues, and one serving the other. Just every time they were on screen, just some great comedic moments. Of course, my favorite being when the Grand Duke starts recalling, you know, the King's sort of romantic notions as Cinderella enters the ball, which I think is a very, very creative way of doing that scene, instead of just having her enter the ball and do the classic, you know, romantic thing that everybody expects. You do that, but you do it with a twist, with narration, as this great moment is. He's narrating what the King is thinking, and what the King is thinking is happening on screen. And of course, that, you know, like, romantic, eh? Take a look at that, you pompous windbag! It's just very funny to me. And then you have the villains. I mean, you have Lucille Ball and Rhoda Williams, the stepsisters, who more were cannon fodder, to be honest. They really had one big scene that they really did well, and that was the whole ripping of Cinderella's dress. It was done extremely well. But, you know, again, Eleanor Audrey, who would later go on to voice such characters as Cruella de Vil. You know, Cruella de Vil, Cruella de Vil, she does not even know. Will, Cruella, Cruella de Vil. And the sad, or should I say, amazing part is I've not seen that movie in years, and I just popped that out of the air like that. But she played Cruella de Vil, and of course, one of my favorite villains of all time, Maleficent. And here she plays Lady Tremaine, and my God, she owns the role. And she makes this movie believable. I mean, you wonder things in the story, like, why does Cinderella just go away and everything? And she is just just with her look, it's the very definition of the, you know, abusive stepmother. You realize just by looking at her that she's the type of woman that there was nowhere that Cinderella could go. She would track her down. It was like she was dedicated, for whatever reason, to making Cinderella's life miserable. Just because the man that she married loved her. Possibly more than he loved her. Or she loved his daughter more than he loved her. And just simple, basic human emotions that we can actually understand, that endears us to Cinderella and makes us fear the stepmother. You know, she's a Disney villain that has no special powers, and yet she is just as dangerous as Maleficent. And again, a lot of it has to do with acting. And Eleanor Audrey does a wonderful job of owning that role and putting that emphasis into the role. And then you have June Foray as Lucifer, which again, it's cat sounds, but again, there's this great comedic sort of actual emotion being put into Lucifer that again makes those scenes entertaining. And of course, that final scene, when he has the mice, and again, it's the whole race to get Cinderella out, was done extremely well. With that, let's move on to story. And as we move on to story, let's go into our first talking point. Let's talk about the overall plot and theme of Cinderella. And you know, the overall fairy tale itself is really, I think, captured in its essence, Pierre, by Walt Disney. You know, the idea of dreams and hope and never giving up on dreams and hope. Because as long as you don't, they will come true. Again, in a classic idea, really, that is established in the sort of lore of Disney of always believing in your dreams to come true. And, you know, the idea that maybe sometimes you just need a little bit of magic for them to come true. But, you know, again, Cinderella is this character who's lasted all these years with her stepmother and stepsisters. You know, she's such a strong woman, she's multiple women, but she's a strong woman, you know, having to deal with the abuse of her stepmother, of her stepsisters. You know, in fact, even loving them because they're family, even though they treat her like hell. You know, believing in those dreams that they'll one day come true. You know, and at the last moment again, of course, you know, when she's on the verge of breaking and giving up on those dreams, her fairy godmother appears. But, you know, again, that overall theme of hope and dreams, you can really be felt throughout the movie. And again, a lot of that comes from, again, the power of music here, you know, the establishment of that theme from that first song being sung at the beginning of the movie, which is such a great scene. And again, you add this wonderful melody and everything. It just shows, again, establishes that theme. It makes it felt through the movie. And just overall, a wonderful execution of that really basic story idea and story theme. Again, and when you dive into the individual character developments and plots and everything, it's just... Really, the main battle is between, you know, again, Cinderella and Lady Tremaine. And, you know, with Cinderella, it is that, you know, seeing her, how hard she works, and yet still always having an upbeat mood. I think this is established at best during the whole Nightingale song with the bubbles and everything. And, again, the metaphors of sort of the bubbles and, you know, the many heartbreaks. And yet, reformations, because, you know, a bubble will, you know, when one breaks, many may possibly form. And so, again, that sort of, almost a bend but not break sort of thing that bubbles sort of can metaphor there. But definitely that the metaphors that are being established about Cinderella, about, you know, sort of her, the ideas of hope and her dreams that she leads her life by. And then, of course, just the utter evilness of Lady Tremaine and how she hates Cinderella just because her father loved Cinderella more than, you know, he loved Lady. In fact, the whole reason why he probably married Lady Tremaine was not mostly because he loved her, was because he, you know, they established the beginning of the movie. He thought that Cinderella needed a mother and went for somebody of good stature and found Lady Tremaine. I really question his judgment. If he goes to Lady Tremaine and says, "You're perfect," then again, I guess we don't know Lady Tremaine's full charm when she was younger, but that's a whole other story. I mean, we do see, you know, sort of bits of it. There is that, you know, again, the actor here does a wonderful job of portraying this. That sort of like, come in. You know, we are honored to have you here. It's that sort of just enough a warmth to sort of lure you in. And so, again, I love the character growth of Cinderella through the film. And while there's really not much of Lady Tremaine, again, the whole individual development here between Cinderella and Lady Tremaine that we see. But as I said, again, the basic story here is, again, it's a classic love story. A boy meets girl at a ball, and they fall in love. And, of course, all these things that try to stop them. So you need padding, but before I get to padding, I'll get to I'll get to padding first, and then I'll get to, again, like I said, the fatal flaw of the movie. You had the padding scenes, which was, again, it was the story between, you know, the mouse and Lucifer, and the king and the Grand Duke. And, of course, those two sort of padding side plots coming together at the end with the, you know, the whole glass slipper situation. And again, the strong points of each of these character developments, which really isn't character developments, they were moments of comedy. Again, like I said, were to pad it out, but it never felt... The comedy was so great, and the stories being told were so great, that it never felt like comedy. And again, you just enjoyed watching the scenes of, you know, Jacques and Gus and Lucifer. Again, that whole Abbott and Costello feel to those characters... And I'm trying to outwit Lucifer. My favorite being when they're going to find trimmings. And Lucifer gets caught in the shirt, and he's like, inching like an inchworm. And it has that sort of creepy music. Which, again, the music there was great. Again, they just let by. He goes, and Lucifer... hits the wall, very cartoon-like, and goes, rum, rum, and it's sort of like, and it has that sort of, the very sorrowful sort of Cinderella music that gets played at certain times through this movie. And here, the other times are serious, but here, this sort of comedic moment, it just makes it more funny. And just some classic sort of comedic, you know, again, the whole Lucifer trying to figure out which plate Gus is on. It's sort of stupidity of Gus, like, throughout the film, Gus is really stupid. It's like, really? That's the option you go for? You go onto the plate? Really? 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 It doesn't make any sense. And equally as funny is, again, the whole king and grand... Again, the king. The whole reasoning that he's throwing the ball, and I think this is genius, is because he basically wants to be a grandfather. And again, it's funny to look at it this day and age and literally be watching a character in a Disney film. Basically, he wants to find his son a woman to boink. Because he wants grandchildren. I mean, does anybody else realize the idea here? I mean, I understand that you don't exactly say how you make grandchildren, but why do you need to get a woman and a man together to create grandchildren? Once you get to a certain age, you understand they have to, you know, well, there's some inserting to things in a hole and, you know, some binding contracts. He's trying to find a girl for his son to boink so he can be a grandpa. That's the whole premise of the ball. And just, you know, again, like I said, the king's like, there must be a woman here that make a suitable wife. Just his mannerisms that make me laugh. Grand Duke, like, overlooking the king, like, you're just a hopeless romantic. The king being a hopeless romantic. The bedroom scene, when Cinderella gets away, and he's trying to break the news. Traitor! Invade! And they're bouncing on the bed. It's just such a great comedic scene. Again, all of this is padding, but it does add and enhance. It adds and enhances, excuse me, to the story, and really makes it a wonderful movie to watch. The unfortunate part with all of this is that one of the most important parts of the movie is sort of the romance between the prince and Cinderella. And while there's enough there for it to be good. And there could have been more done, I think, to... Even though, it was a couple of nights, I don't think that one song really just captured fully this sort of instant falling in love between the prince and Cinderella, and you know, this soulmate sort of feeling that you were supposed to capture. I think there really needed to be more there that wasn't captured. So, again, that's what makes it sort of the weak. And again, a lot of that also has to do with the fact that you really don't know the prince that much. I think maybe if we knew the prince a bit more from the prince's sort of side of the story, you know, maybe that scene could have done better. It just ends up being the weakest part, sort of the fatal flaw. You know, every film has a fatal flaw, and this being it, you know, sort of the lack of knowledge of the prince and just the incompleteness feel of, you know, the whole Cinderella and the prince falling in love. You know, again, it just makes it seem like the only reason Cinderella wants to marry the prince is because he's good looking. And, but then again, when has anybody ever complained about a woman falling in love with a man just because he's good looking? That's never happened. At the end of the day, though, Cinderella is an animation classic. It's a Walt Disney classic. It's one of the greatest animated films of all time. It's an important part of animation history. It's the establishment of Walt Disney as an animated creator legend. You know, it established the dominance of Walt Disney. It gave it the capital for Walt Disney to do so many things into the future, to create its own studio and everything. And it is an example of what dreams the heart makes can be when they come true. So at the end of the day, I give Cinderella a 5 out of 5. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Remember, there are numerous ways you can find the show and comment the show and leave a message or anything that you want to. You can always email us at absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. You can leave us a comment on Facebook by liking our Facebook page, which you can find at you go to Facebook.com, search for the Absolution Network, like us, leave us a comment there. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the page, on the website, which also includes the Otaku Momentum, which is really worth checking out, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're there, check out all of the other 132 Productions sites that do wonderful things. This includes, of course, Shaft Plus, which is rapidly approaching its launch date. Random Redbox Reviews, Chris Stanton, which you can find at www.randomredboxreviews.com. Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. I'm sorry, I slipped up there. And, of course, also the Comic Book Crazy podcasting network that has Hexcast and Comic Book Crazy. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, while you're at any of these sites, remember to check out all our friends, which includes Michael Bailey's Views from Lombox, Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawlspace, Steven Schleicher's Major Spoilers Podcast, and of course, Scott Gardner's 22 Freaks, along with many others. They do wonderful stuff. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, well, we go into the 80s. And we cover probably one of the most underappreciative Disney classic. Well, I don't know if I can say Disney classic, but Disney animated films of all time. A film that stars the great Vincent Price. You know, call Dr. Watson. Get your Earl Grey ready and everything. And get your thinking caps on. Because next week, we review The Great Mouse Detective. Only on the Absolution Network's Tom's Ride. So, until next week, my Tsunami Generation, stay golden.
Well, that about does her. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom, signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.